What's easier to find? A pink unicorn or three men going back to the classroom? We actually found one of those, and you're about to find out which one. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From TheOnion.com, no way to prevent this, says Only Nation, where this regularly happens. In the hours following the violent rampage in Texas, in which a lone attacker killed 8 individuals and seriously injured several others, citizens living in the only country where this kind of mass killing routinely occurs reportedly concluded Friday that there was no way to prevent the massacre from taking place.
Well, there you have it, The Onion.
The Onion talking truth.
The Onion talking truth. Well, so we were talking about that, right? It's like, is this really an Onion story, or is this The Onion telling the truth, making fun of truth, making...
I got lost there.
But it's actually, it's a pretty sad statement. People might want to agree, maybe think The Onion went overboard with making such a claim that, you know, this is a nation where we've just said, hey, going to school and being shot is something that is part of the American culture, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Well, what The Onion has always done is they've taken an issue and they have oversimplified it to the point of where they make fun of it or where they point out the oversimplification. And that's what they did here. Is they really just, I mean, because if you ask anyone on the street, what can you do?
Nothing.
Well, I don't know. Nothing we can do.
That's just the way of life. And that, though, hopefully makes more people think to the point of saying, really? This is really
this
where
is
we're
all
at?
We
we're going to accept that, you know, but kids go to school now and the expectation is along with your fire drill, along with pee breaks, you're going to have, you know, intrusive shooter training. That's just the reality because we're not going to stop it.
The Onion.
We as a nation have decided we can't do it.
Right.
This is just not up to us. We're not up to the challenge.
Well, I think it is oversimplifying it with what The Onion says, but you have to look at it. And I think that's how a lot of people feel is, are we up to the challenge? What can we do?
Yeah. And that is a great question, though. And I think what The Onion hopefully brings people back to is that what can we do? Because wait a minute, it cannot be as insane as The Onion puts it, to where we go, we're just going to live with this. So can The Onion drive us back to a question of saying, but what can we do? And if we can get there, maybe it's a start.
From Esquire.com, an opinion piece by Dave Holmes. Okay, now I actually do want to take your guns. Young people of America are now expecting to witness gun violence in their schools. It doesn't have to be that way.
So we have to point out it's an opinion piece.
Yes.
Right? But here, directly in going into this, Dave Holmes is like, you know what? At this point now, after the El Paso shooting, NRA, I've had it. And because now, remember, the NRA is always going out there saying, look, they really want to take your guns. That's really behind gun control. Gun control is about taking your guns.
Right.
You know, people are always like, no, it's just common sense. We, you know, you should be registered. You should have practice. You should not have certain
accessories.
Right, things like that,
things
right?
Like that. Yeah.
And no, it's like, forget it.
Nope. Now I do want them.
It's over. I want the guns. But he puts it in the context, and this is where, you know, I think there's some merit, and you and I can talk about this, is to say, because the NRA has brought this on themselves by insisting and continuing to constantly say, in response to these shootings, the answer mostly is never gun protection or gun laws, but is always some form of gun escalation. So teachers need guns, right?
It's, I see what you mean, yeah.
And so he's like going, look, if you guys are going to do the crazy, I'm going to do the crazy too. I'm going to take your guns.
He wants to melt them down, put them in a ball, and roll them away.
Roll them away just in like that big ball rolling after Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Right, you know, take them down.
And, good image.
And you know, some people would say, well, geez, my God, see, the NRA is going to now use this as proof. See,
right.
Crazy liberals do want to take our guns. Dave Holmes said so. It's like, Dave Holmes said so. Crazy liberals might or might not want to take your guns away. But at what point, NRA, are you going to come to the table with a discussion point that isn't about keeping things exactly the same and or even advocating for more guns? That's his point. Do we agree with it or not? I agree. Let's talk about this, because as we talked about in the last article, if we are going to do anything, we need to get both sides in a room to agree to do something.
Right.
If the agree to do ramping, you know, this NRA is going to ramp it up, then as a citizen, I'm sorry, I'm just going to have to take your gun.
Well, I think you're right, though. Both sides do need to kind of come to the table and talk about this, because if it's the NRA saying, you know what, the problem is we need more guards in school and we need more metal detectors as they come into school, then schools could say, but you know what, maybe we should take away what makes these guns super deadly.
Right.
And maybe they can some come to that.
Right.
But this oversimplification, once again. I'm going to make a big statement to make a statement, but it's not exactly what you can do.
But let's talk about people, because you know what? Here it is again. El Paso, Texas. Mm-hmm. It was just February, and we've got dead children, dead teachers. The answer is not more guns. The answer may not be but we can't continue to have this conversation if we're not going to say, yeah, both of us might have a problem somewhere. Let's figure this out.
From thinkprogress.org, NRA president blames Santa Fe school shooting on Ritalin. The Santa Fe, Texas school where a gunman killed 9 students and a teacher on Friday was a highly secure facility with award-winning security preparations and 2 armed guards patrolling the hallways. But the National Rifle Association's new incoming president, Oliver North, does not think it was secure enough. And he thinks the underlying problem is that too many boys are on Ritalin.
Well, there you have it. That's the Ollie North, Iran-Contra.
That's who I thought it was when I was looking at his picture. I'm like, is that him?
Well, but so first of all, yes, there's been a change of the presidency of the NRA. If people didn't realize, Charlton Heston hasn't been around for a while. He's no longer.
He
would have to have the gun pulled from his, from his cold, dead hands.
He would.
But no, Oliver North is now the front man. And after Santa Fe, and this may go to our last story in Dave Holmes and the opinion, here's the NRA taking a position that, first of all, scientifically, there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that Ritalin, boys, and school shootings make for a cause and effect relationship. Okay. There's no warning on TV when they run the Ritalin ads. You know, this may happen, this may happen, and you may shoot up your school. If this happens, tell your doctor.
Okay? Right.
Not a warning that the FDA puts on there.
No. Okay?
So, craziness. The other part, though, too, which is hidden in this, is there needs to be more security. So get the boys off Ritalin and put in more security. And more security, he's very, very specific. He talks about, in one point, the idea of a sequence of metal detectors.
Yeah, it was
above and beyond what you do to get on an airplane.
Right.
To get into schools. And, yes, guess what? Of course, arming teachers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, sure.
So if you make it through 5 metal detectors and you're off Ritalin,
then we'll be okay.
And the teacher's got guns, okay?
Then we're fine.
It's like, this is, again, no, this is a crazy guy. And I know people who are pro-gun are sitting there going, well, you're just poking fun at him and you're an anti-gun liberal. I'm like, well, okay, I can own the anti-gun liberal label, but that doesn't make Oliver North not crazy. Okay? I can be an anti-gun liberal and Oliver North can be crazy.
Right.
Because when you make a crazy statement such as boys, Ritalin, video games, the whole culture going to hell in a handbasket as being the reason for school shootings, that means you're kind of out there not playing with the full deck. Just calling it like it is.
Time for Tim to rant. This is Someone Has to Say It.
First Ritalin, now Jim Crow. From the stuff-up files. As we heard just a second ago, Mr. Iran-Contra, Ollie North, new NRA president, blamed last week's school shootings in Texas on Ritalin. Now he has decided that calls for common-sense gun control? They are an attack on the civil rights of gun owners, even going so far as to insinuate that Jim Crow lynchings and the calls for gun control are comparable. First, since when did the NRA become a civil rights organization? And second, really, there is no second. This is just effing offensive. In fact, here's an exact quote from old Ollie. Quote, this is the kind of thing that's never been seen against a civil rights organization in America. You have to go back to the horrible days of Jim Crow and those kinds of things. Even there, you didn't have this kind of thing. During the Jim Crow era, many states and cities passed laws that institutionalized racial discrimination and segregation. Lynchings were common. Civil rights activists were beaten and killed. Wait, did North just compare NRA members to the beaten and killed civil rights activists? Yep. You know, I think I now know what Dave Holmes and Esquire was talking about. When you get so crazy as to blame Ritalin and then equate gun advocates and civil rights activists, it's beyond time. I want all of your damn guns. Now.
This is Busted Pencils from Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, teaching all children.
Welcome to Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Today, I have three gentlemen who have decided that working the grind out there, making big money in the private sector, is something they're willing to do without. In fact, they are re-entering school to become licensed school teachers. Welcome to the show, Brian Ward, Alex Morey, Wally Longo.
Thank you. Thanks for having
okay.
us.
Okay, so listen, this is you. Has anybody checked, you know, asked you to check in or get any type of pulse or medical conditions about why you would decide to become a teacher at this point in your life?
I'm expecting that in like a couple months.
Okay, because you're not officially done yet.
Yeah, of course.
There's still a chance for you, Brian, to pull out.
Like
Wally, what about you?
You know, this was a decision I did not make lightly, so I'm ready, Tim. Oh, I am.
You sure?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Alex?
I've had it a few times. I think every time I bring it up with someone, they just say, wait, what?
Okay, well, so first question then is, you know, and go around. I'll start at Wally. I mean, let's give us a little bit of detail. I mean, why? So, I mean, why change at this point? Just so people understand, you're career changers. You're coming back to school. You've already have a bachelor's degree. Some of you worked in private sector. Some of you did public stuff. Some of you have been international. But you've, at this point in your life, decided, no, I want to go back and get a license to become a teacher. Why?
Tim, I grew up in a family where service-oriented work, vocational calling-type professions were important. I was, in 2016, I was 31 years old. I moved back to Madison, and that summer, I kind of had this epiphany sitting in my office that I wasn't doing what I wanted to be doing. I had volunteered as a tutor, teacher, mentor, coach in several capacities. People always said, oh, hey, you know, you should try to look into teaching. You know, maybe that would be something you could do if you want more fulfillment. And through a series of events, I landed in Fran Johnson's office at Edgewood College, and we had a really candid talk about why I wanted to do this and what the Edgewood program was about. And we thought that our values and why I wanted to do this were aligned. And next thing you know, I'm sitting at your radio show. Oh my. 12 credits 12, in,
12
Tim.
Credits. Yeah. So you're 12 credits in, but you're still going with it.
I'm still going with it. And seriously, doing something of value that I believe is of value to people and to make the world, you know, as cliche as it might sound, a better place is something that's really important to me at an older age. And that's why I am entering this, field.
It's a profession.
It's a profession. Okay. I agree.
All right, Alex.
So I guess for me, my big thing was, you know, my parents and my siblings have all been teachers. So I grew up in the system. I grew up with my parents at Frank Alice Elementary School, and you know, they would always come back home and tell me stories. And it was really, I loved hearing those stories of teaching. And after college, I basically went and taught. So I went to South Korea for 3 years, and then I taught in Palestine for a little while too.
Right.
So I have a little bit of international experience.
But your original degree was not teaching.
No, it's just history.
That's what I mean. So you went and taught overseas.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Without a teaching license.
Yeah, right.
Because overseas, they'll take you without a license.
Right, so you basically just get it. Exactly. I mean, you just need an, just basically need to speak English and you're good to go. But they require a graduation or undergrad degree, and then you're good to go, basically. But yeah, it's just been kind of always on my mind in terms of coming back and getting my education degree. And I essentially just, when I finished, I came back and taught tennis for a while. So I've been teaching actually this whole time.
Okay.
It's just now I'm just going to get it certified.
So now, so you want to be real?
Yes.
Okay,
exactly.
Real teacher.
Make it official.
All right, Brian Ward.
All right, so this has always been something in the back of my mind of being a teacher. My mom was a teacher growing up, so I definitely, similar to Alex, saw it. But I graduated. You know, I worked in the nonprofit sector for a while. I worked in the bike industry, and I still am in the bike industry right now. But I've always been really active on the political end, being really involved in activism. This is something that, you know, I've definitely always been in the back of my mind. And this summer, I just kind of had, I guess this past summer, had this an epiphany. I said, I just need to do it now. You know, I just like and either do it now or never. And and really kind of the drive to subject standpoint of really trying to develop passion in history, and really I remember those teachers that like drove that into my mind and like being involved and active in my community, and I want to be that person on the other end.
So is it a calling? Is there something? I mean, people, you know, it sounds religious and stuff like yeah. that, right? But I mean, it sounds to me. I mean, not one of you said, "I can't wait for the awesome pay."
Well, I'm in retail right now, so it actually might be an upside.
Considering what
for
you're
me.
Making now, but yeah. I mean, I didn't. You know, I heard from all three of you, like a sense of mission, a sense mm-hmm. of purpose. In fact, Wally, you even said values.
Yeah, so people do give me a hard time about that occasionally when I bring that up. And to be honest, to be totally honest, when I decided to change careers, I thought I wanted to go into the Madison Police Department. And so through the 2 years that I was a candidate with the police department, just because of the, I believe the police department in the area is very progressive, and the work they do in the community is something that was very appealing to me. Well, as I was going through this process, I kept dabbling or becoming on the fringe of teaching and education. And that I kind of gravitated towards those opportunities more than anything. So literally, I was kind of, in a way, called towards it, because it wasn't my first choice when I decided to, you know, make this big career change, take this big pay cut that everybody keeps reminding me about. And I do think that in 20 years, if I didn't do something and that I felt driven or called to do, I would look back on those years and regret it. And so there's definitely this sense of mission and calling, as and people can believe what they want because it's true. So,
hey, Alex?
Yeah, you know, I'm coming the same boat as Brian was. You know, it's a value for me too. When I looked at my teachers growing up, and you know, my history teachers in particular were really big influences on me in terms of wanting to get into history. And so I always remember that, and I really wanted to strike that passion with students too, the passion of history. Or social studies or just education in general. I really wanted to kind of be a mentor for them, you know, give them, you know, the, you know, whatever calling they wanted to. I wanted to be 100% supportive of every kid that comes inside my classroom. And I've seen myself doing that in tennis, because I was a former tennis teacher too. But, you know, for me, I gave up, you know, owning a club almost. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a club in Lake Geneva, and I gave up a lot of, you know, money to do that. And I want to come back and just, you know, teach education. And I think that's a real passion for me, and a passion for me to just, you know, not just for me, but, you know, to help anyone that I can in any way, shape, or form.
Brian?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, obviously it does feel a little bit like a calling, but I think about so many people don't think nowadays. You know, it's like, you know, honestly, it's
are
like,
you kidding?
Yeah, yeah, I know. And so it, like, teaching kids how to think, and that's like, to me, the biggest thing. Like, I will never forget, like, when I started getting involved in like political activism, it was my senior year of high school, and there was the Iraq War happened, and we split up the classroom and had a debate. I was like one of three people against the war, and it definitely, that was a formative moment for me, for who I am today. And I think about that impact that, you know, as a teacher, that you could create, like, whether you're not gonna get every kid. You know, it's going to be the ones, the twos, the threes, and it's like, it's those people that you can really try to be realistic about that and put something in them that they'll carry with them the rest of their lives, and it will help mold them and shape them.
Brian, any challenges that you see ahead?
None at all.
None at all.
I'm just kidding.
This is going to be a simple piece of cake.
Yeah, I think. I think that the biggest challenge is simply the attack on public education in our country right now. I think that's tough. Like being in a classroom right now through our practicum and seeing how stretched thin teachers can be because of budget cuts. And mm-hmm. I think that's going to be one of the biggest challenges. And also, I think combating the idea that education can change everything, because education is interconnected with the community around them. And the fact that if a child comes to school that is hungry, they're not going to learn as well. And so I think that's going to be the challenge, is that the classroom is not in a vacuum. And we'll see what happens in the classroom, but I'm already seeing that in the classroom, where there needs to be more help. Like, for example, I'm helping kids with IEPs, which is great. I'm more than happy to.
Yeah. Plan, just so everybody knows.
Yeah. Right. Okay, which is absolutely great. But I'm not a trained like special educator quite yet. Like, there should be a professional, paid person in that classroom to help with that.
Alex, so. Challenges.
I think some of the biggest challenges that we're going to face is just, the amount of hats we have to wear, mentor, teacher, guide, coach. We carry a lot of baggage with us too. And it can be really challenging sometimes when we have to grade, do the curriculum, student management, when kids come in that are hungry or something, strike our lesson plans accordingly to them. So I think the amount of hats that we have to wear is really a challenge, and it can really kind of wear down on a lot of people sometimes. But that's also, challenges are also really good in terms of, pushing yourself forward to surpass them. Mm-hmm. And I always accept challenges and just, I embrace them, because, it's part of growing. It's part of getting out of your comfort zone a little bit. So I think that's one of the biggest things, and especially with the curriculum-based things we have to deal with too. What kind of creativity are we going to be able to have in the classroom? Standardized tests, are we going to have to really, just push our kids to learn these standardized tests? Or, these are challenges that we have to really come to and hopefully get past too.
Yeah, we'll work on that. Wally, I mean, what are you thinking? What are you seeing out there? Any challenge? Wally's like, I don't see any challenges. I'm taking this world on, man.
So just because I came into this a little less aware of the environment maybe than my classmates or whatever you want to call them. I look at it more from a challenge for me personally in the classroom when I'm teaching is going to be taking the days that don't go so well and not dwelling and taking that so personally that I didn't make a difference that day, or that I wasn't able to get across to this student or that student. I got into this trying to reach the kids that sit in the back of the classroom, mm-hmm. or maybe that have always been traditionally labeled as misbehaving or less intelligent than other students. So I can, I believe personally, connect with those students. But having a full 360 connection with everybody in the class to me is really, really important, but I'm nervous and I'm anxious about doing that day in and day out, because I know it will affect me. And I'm just trying to come to grips with not every day is going to go well, and there's going to be students you're not, maybe.
So think about these. You, all of you were extremely, really clearly seeing, you're halfway through your licensing program. There are challenges out there, whether it be mm-hmm. curriculum, whether it be the students, whether it be too many students, whether it be expectations of parents, expectations of society, whether society even looks at me as this thing. Yeah. And you see this now already, but I want to switch gears and say, but you decided to come into a full licensing program knowing full well that in the state of Wisconsin right now, that your passion to teach, you actually could already skip licensing and go into the classroom. Why put your money and time into an education? Why learn to be a teacher? Alex.
That's funny you said, because when I first started the program, I kind of told myself, I've already done this. I've already taught English. I've already taught, you know, in other schools. I've taught 40 kids in one class in Korea. I've done this before. So why do I? And I think the biggest, when I started the program, I started to realize, oh, this is why. Because I'm really starting to see who I am as a person. I've been really starting to unpack myself and, you know, see the type of person that I am and how I teach and learn these different methods in order to do it. You know, I can go and wing it, but I'm also like, I want to be prepared for it, prepared for what happens in the teaching field, know what I'm going to be getting into also. And I think those are really important things that I think every teacher needs. If you just take someone who just gets a certification just by the pro, like a random program, and not go through the education process, it just kind of turns into a revolving door. They get the curriculum, they teach it, and then they're done or something. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we have passions. We clearly have passions. And that's why we go into this industry. And that's why we're going into education right now, because we're passionate about it.
Brian.
So it was interesting. I had this like kind of moment when I was, I had been accepted. And things were starting to change. And, you know, I was like, this is so stupid. Not me going to school, but the new non-licensing license. Because I was like, by no means, even with an undergrad degree and feeling very confident about the content, am I prepared to go into the classroom by any means? And like, and then thinking that idea that there would be people like that are going to go through these like kind of, you know,
right now, 10 months, $1,500, yeah. No student teaching, all online.
Exactly.
You can be a teacher
That's insanity. I mean, I didn't trust myself, because I'm like, I believe because of this passion, I need to learn how to be a teacher. I know, like, I can talk about U.S. history. I can talk about U.S. government. I can talk about that stuff. But can I do it in an effective way as a teacher? And that's why we need these programs and need to, like, actually not be undoing these licensing programs.
Wally, I mean, you seem surprised. Oh, yeah. Preparation.
Well, yeah. It's just to piggyback off my pals over here. I'm anxious enough about it as it is. So if I get into the class and I'm underprepared, you're going to see it all over my face and I'm probably sweat through my shirt. So it's a way to prepare me as best as I can be prepared, because listen, if I was a student once and I knew the teachers that were underprepared or that weren't as qualified as other teachers. And my biggest fear is when I walk out of that class and they go, man, Mr. Longo didn't know what he was talking about at all. And that's entirely a possibility until I go and sit and I train.
Because you've made that statement about other teachers.
Because I've made that statement 15 years ago. I apologize to all my teachers. But listen, you know, and I just think it's a disservice. I think somebody said disservice to your class if you're not as prepared as you can be. And that's why I think it's important.
Well, as we're coming up here on like the last, I mean, seriously, 2 minutes here, if you guys each can take, you know, 30 seconds or so. I mean, encouragement, if somebody's out there thinking about doing this, Brian,
I think the encouragement is, I mean, in the broader scope of things, what's happening with teachers right now that are actually defending public education is that these teachers right now are fighting for a public education that will hopefully incentivize teachers to this exodus that's happening, for them to come on back and to actually have good quality teachers and demand a good quality public education for these kids. And that's what's inspiring to me right now with going into this.
Alex?
Yeah, kind of the same thing as what Brian said. It's important that we see like what the teachers are doing right now, and they are really being empowered. And I think also the students are being really empowered too. And it makes me passionate to see the students respond in the ways they have in the past 3 months, and see that empowerment with them. And then for me to come in and, you know, I want to just keep that going. Okay, and just making sure we empower students more often to have these types of things happen. So I think that's really important.
Wally?
If you are a person who believes a single interaction with a kid or a child or somebody who needs a little bit of extra help, if you believe that a single interaction can change their life, look into education. That's the foundation from which I began this quote journey, because I honest to God believe that when you talk to somebody or interact with somebody and have a positive experience, people talk about how are we going to change society all the time? How are we going to do it? How are we going to fix this? it starts at the grassroots kind of level. It starts in schools, and having these positive interactions with young people, I think, is so important, because I remember those interactions. I remember the negative ones, and I remember the positive ones. And the positive ones can send people on a trajectory to do good things or to be kind people, and that's super important.
Man. So here's the deal. Wally Longo, Alex Morey, Brian Ward, first of all, thank you. You're halfway through. I want to get you back when you're done. What do you say? And
absolutely.
Then see how this goes. But right now, I'm really encouraged. And listeners out there, I know they're sitting there going, tell them, Tim, tell them. You guys really do bust pencils. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
We are busting pencils!
This is Busted Pencils from Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, teaching all children.
He is an English teacher and department chair at Madison Memorial High School in Madison, Wisconsin. He is also nationally board certified and has been teaching for 20 years. Welcome to Busted Pencils, teacher Chris Vander Ark.
Thanks a lot. It's great to be here.
First thing, Chris, I want to tell you, I appreciate you.
Thank you.
What's Teacher Appreciation Week?
You got it.
So at Busted Pencils, we would have to say we appreciate you. Have you been getting a lot of appreciation all week at school, though?
Yeah, the PTSO has done an incredible job, probably best in the state.
All right. And any little emails from kids like, hey, Mr. Vander Ark, yo, you were awesome. And
I think the adults are more tuned in than the kids, but some kids have written notes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's been a good week.
Unsolicited to boot.
I think it's part of the Teacher Appreciation Week. Yep.
Okay, good. So, Chris, I got to admit, coming upon your story is a little bit of an embarrassment to me. Not that anything you did, it's me. I tend to think of myself as Mr. I know all standardized tests. I hate all standardized tests. I oppose all standardized tests. And somebody turns to me on and says, have you met this teacher, Chris Vander Ark? And he gives a test that's called the Work Keys. And what can you tell him that would help him kind of, and I was like, I have no idea. I don't know what this Work Keys test is. So how about let's just start right there. It's a standardized test. We've got that set. It's called Work Keys.
Yep.
And it has some connection to the ACT.
Yep. So it's part of the ACT. It's an AC part of the ACT suite of tests. So ACT gives, we give the ACT and Work Keys.
You didn't mean to call ACT a suite test, did you?
ACT gives both of these. Yep.
Okay.
They're both from the ACT. And it's more workplace focused.
Okay.
So it's got a very clear focus. So, it's got several different sections that it has. And, Wisconsin's one of four states in the country that, has all high school students take the test.
When you say, so Wisconsin, the state of Wisconsin and a few other states, is it required?
In Wisconsin, it is. Yep.
It's required.
All juniors take it. All juniors take the ACT, and all juniors take the Work Keys test.
So again, as I feel at a loss because I'm pretty sure then my son, who's a senior, who's graduating, took this test without me knowing, and I didn't opt him out, and I'm feeling like, holy crap. All right, but that's done. So he obviously did okay, I guess, or I would have been told, because he's graduating. Is this a graduation hang-up issue
so
test?
Different states use this in different ways. Wisconsin doesn't use it as a graduation requirement.
Okay.
I think that it's part of being workplace ready. And I think that because that's a focus for us in the state, then we use this test. And this test is I think it's seen as a nice way for us to give emphasis not only to college ready, but also career ready or workplace ready.
It's interesting, just an aside comment, considering that I just saw the job rates. We've lost more jobs in Wisconsin than we've gained, so I'm not sure that making sure people are ready for jobs is a great use of time since there aren't jobs.
Right.
Other side story, we won't get there, though. Okay, what is workplace ready mean?
So there aren't that many sample questions online that you can find. And there's different levels of questions. And so it's designed. So some of these are very easy. Level 3 questions are really easy.
Okay.
And high school juniors are pretty much offended by having to take these.
So an example level 3 question as best you can.
Sort of a workplace question about, it'd be probably like elementary school math, as far as I can tell.
Okay. Content area.
Yes. But again, in a workplace
setting. In form of a word problem. So you...
So temperature
You serve snow cones and the ice machine is now reading 33 degrees. Is that a problem?
Right. And so it's just simple arithmetic.
Okay.
Right. And it does get harder from there. But it starts out at, you know, the level three questions are easier.
So, but it's... And you say workplace ready. This makes me wonder, workplaces, places of work, which could be anywhere... I'm at a loss. I don't know of any companies that have ever come to me and said, we really put a lot of stock in the results of this test when we hire employees. We look at their work keys test results. Yep. I've not heard that.
Right. I haven't heard that either. And so I've been digging in the last, you know, year or so. And I've heard that some local businesses do ask for this.
Okay.
And I've also heard that in the northern part of the state, north of Wausau, that this is much more, the test is more used and more drawn upon.
Okay.
Again, I've heard this. I haven't checked it out.
Used and drawn upon, but we're not saying required.
So the question is, do businesses use this and do they want employers to have this certification?
Right. Well, because and so a couple here and there doesn't sound like this is a massive, whether it's Wisconsin or the other three states, an agreed upon type of an assessment that tells employers that their employees are workplace ready. And I've still yet to figure out what workplace ready means. I'm still at the workplace trying to figure out how to be ready for my job, but it happens. But yeah, but even that term itself, right? Workplace ready. Where does that come from?
So again, I'm an English teacher and I'm here in this capacity of watching my students take the test. And that's the only reason I'm here is because I watch juniors sit for a test that I question the value of. So I'm not claiming to be an expert on the test. In my looking through it, I haven't come up with a huge range of businesses. But, you know, I don't know. It could be that in different parts of this state, this is something real. And the reason that we're trying to raise awareness is simply to find out about this.
Yeah, and so let's go right to your class and your students. As you said, this is really the issue driving you is because when the students, I'm sure like any student, they don't like any test. But, I mean, their sense of this is like they have the kind of like, what are we doing this for type of attitude, right? I mean, is that what's driving you to kind of ask questions?
You know, students mostly are good students. And if they're asked to do something, then they want to do it. I was so impressed when we gave the test. We gave it about a month ago and I was asked to help proctor the test. And so we have half the juniors in a room, so several hundred students. And they're all sitting in rows and sitting alphabetically, so two to a table. And really the reason I'm here is because there were three tests for about an hour each. Mm-hmm. Took many of the students about a half an hour. So they had a half an hour each, after which they could do nothing. And they weren't allowed to have a book or a phone or anything.
Right.
And so I just looked out and I saw two of these students just staring straight ahead. And it was like you couldn't make this stuff up.
Okay. They weren't Zen meditating.
I didn't see any value in it.
Okay.
And to me, it seemed like we were burning through 4 hours and I couldn't see any value in it. So, again, you want to see this from the perspective of what it feels like in high school. So if we give it on a Tuesday, then on the Monday, all the teachers are saying, remember, we won't have class tomorrow because you'll be doing the test. And when the students ask, well, what is this? The teachers aren't really sure.
Okay.
Because it's not really tied into what we're doing. The school doesn't really get usable data from this that we are able to use. The students get feedback, but I haven't found students that find this meaningful.
Right.
So they're not sure why they're doing it, but we have an awesome group of kids. They're sitting there, they're willing to take it, but it just seemed like an absolute waste of a morning. So my goal is to try to figure out who might this test be useful for. And if we're giving it, not because it's meaningful to us, but just for compliance, then I just think that should cause us to ask some pretty hard questions.
Well, I think it makes me ask hard questions all the time. To be honest, people know where I'm coming from. I haven't found any real good high-stakes standardized test, and this doesn't even seem like it has any stakes attached to it, but the stakes, though, here are is that 4 hours of instructional time that kids could be in your class in English digging into an 11th grade some type of deep novel, or you know, really working with how to write a persuasive essay using evidence, yeah. things that really are workplace ready.
Again, if you walk through the school on a morning, it feels like school. It feels like kids are tuned in and doing work. And this, again, just seems like an absolute void, a vacuum of any work. And I think if you do the math and you multiply this around the state, and you could have a video of all these students sitting there, you know, 4 hours at a pop, how many, you know, thousands and thousands of students? I just think that the loss is just profound. And again, I'm willing to be persuaded that this is hugely useful to a whole bunch of businesses. But, you know, so far I haven't seen that.
Well, there's an invitation. So business that you're out there listening, you're a Work Keys proponent, you need to let us know at Busted Pencils. Call us or, you know, email us at bustedpencils.com. Come onto the website because, you know, Chris, as a teacher, has a legitimate concern here. It's not that you're saying I won't give it either.
Again, to be clear, this is far out of my control. The school is giving this because the district gives it because we're in compliance with the state.
Right. Certainly. But, when you talk about that, the whole compliance part, though, does start to make me get a little bit like, okay, why? Give me a good reason. But you pointed out something else, too, that I didn't even think about that. I thought about just your class, your students, your 3 to 4 hours. But when you said that, as we do that across the state, across multiple schools, all the time waste, that exponential type of an effect, right? You start to go, wow. Then I also start to say each student that takes that test – and then that test itself then needs to be scored. And then those scores, something needs to be done with that. Right. There's a business there that makes a lot of money off of that.
Someone's profiting.
Right. Certainly. And so my next question is, how much money is spent on this test by the state? And once again, should we even be spending money on this when we're looking at teachers who are out working second jobs, who are bringing in rulers for their kids, who are doing it, you know, and instead we're taking this test. So, Chris, you know what? I mean, it's the ACT suite of tests, and it's called the Work Keys.
Yep. And so it's the ACT and the Work Keys are two different tests.
Well,
and again, the ACT is more college ready. This is more workplace ready.
Workplace ready. So there it is, Chris Van Der Ark, teacher, English teacher, asking the question, really, what about the Work Keys? Is it valuable? We want to put that out there. We want your feedback. So go to BustedPencils.com. Let us know what you think. And you know what? Tell Chris, though, even though the show will be done at that time, we appreciate you, man.
Thanks a lot.
And the other thing, though, what we do is we love... Thank you for busting pencils, Chris.
We are busting pencils!
Time for our salute to legendary historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
Any humane and reasonable person must conclude that if the ends, however desirable, are uncertain and the means are horrible and certain, that these means must not be employed.
My thanks to my students, Wally, Brian, and Alex. Also, Chris Van Der Ark and you. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Thanks for Busting Pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.